Hello, Acceleration Nation. On today's podcast, I have a special guest, Jeffrey Moss. He is an entrepreneur like myself, started a company called Parker Dewey, where he is also accelerating careers. He's helping students in college, in graduate schools, to own their career, to get matched up for micro internships, which provide an amazing foot in the door for individuals to either pivot or launch their career. I did it back when I was in business school myself, when I figured out an internship at Kraft, which helped get me more offers. And you'll hear about that in this episode. And you'll also really learn about how Jeffrey is democratizing access to opportunity for underrepresented, underestimated, underpaid talent. So without further ado, I'm going to hand you off to the conversation with Jeffrey and myself. Own your career. Hello, and welcome to another Own Your Career podcast. Today, I am very fortunate to have Jeffrey Moss on the podcast. Jeffrey, I came across as I was involved in some university organizations, NACE, National Association of College. I don't even know what the E stands for.
Colleges and employers.
Colleges and employers. I saw a couple of posts that Jeffrey posted on the listserv there, and I reached out to him and found out that we have some commonalities. My cousin's friends with Jeffrey, and we're also in a very similar space where we're trying to help underrepresented, underestimated, underpaid talent really take charge of their career and grow their career. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jeffrey, who can do a little bit better job of introducing himself and what Parker Dewey does.
Thanks so much, Alan. And I think you did a great job so far. So real quickly, my background before I got into this whole focus on college to career transitions, my background was primarily in finance. I spent about 15 years as an investor in education and technology and was really intrigued at the intersection thereof. How can we use technology to deliver education more fairly, more effectively to learners, whether they were K-12 learners, post-secondary learners, adults? And how can we use technology not to replace college or replace university, but really to enhance? And one of the things I saw as an investor in the space was how fundamentally broken college to career was. For individuals, if they didn't have the quote unquote right academic pedigree, major, GPA, family connections, it was hard to land a job. And even if they were fortunate enough to have those opportunities, how do they know what they want to do? How do you as an 18, 19, 20-year-old know if you want to do marketing versus sales versus finance? And if you think you like marketing, how do you know if you want to be a content creator versus marketing analytics or work at a big company or small company or work in a certain industry? And at the same time, employers continue to rely on things when making hiring decisions that weren't really predictive. Again, GPA, major, et cetera. And we know GPA doesn't predict a good hire. So while all of that was going on and we had this fundamental problem, we saw the emergence of the gig economy. And I'm not talking the Ubers or the DoorDashes, but the Upworks and Fivers, where professionals are willing to let real projects get done outside of their four walls by individuals. And we saw that intersection of college to career and the emergence of the gig economy, and the light bulb went off. Can we create a platform that allows busy professionals to engage college students on real paid professional projects? One, is a way to get some work done, but two, as a way to engage in, for lack of a better term, audition and build brand with prospective candidates. And with that, we pioneered the concept of the micro internship about 7 years ago and have been doing it ever since. Sorry for the long-winded answer,
no.
Alan.
No, that's great, Jeffrey. And I love the idea of micro internships. So I'm an entrepreneur. I started Kadima Careers and we have lots of employees and we're paying them real employee rates. We've had some interns in the past, and it's worked out pretty well, but I've kind of had to source them on my own. So for companies that want to find some of this great talent and help empower this talent, talk a little bit first about like how you're preparing these. They're mostly undergrads, right?
Mostly. But when we say college, it's really broadly defined. So again, it's still majority undergrad, but it also includes grad students. But they also includes non-traditional programs. Think boot camps and other workforce training. Really, it's for anyone who is launching their professional career.
You prepare them so that they're enabled to be supported by the company? Because I'm used to more traditional internships. I've done some internships myself, and I've hosted lots of interns at Google and Facebook and American Express and so forth. Those are pretty intense investments in the individual students, and there's a small number of students that can get into these. So talk a little bit about the, I would imagine the volume is much more broad in terms of the number of students and the number of micro internships, but talk about like how you're almost democratizing the ability for people to get opportunity and for companies to get work done.
I love the term democratizing because, again, the beauty of this model is it truly creates a win-win. So first of all, the micro internships do not replace the traditional summer internships or co-ops that Alan, you and I are used to. As one of the college students described it, and it was less creepy coming from her versus a 40-something married guy, is they're almost like going on a date. The micro internship is like going on a date, and the summer internship or co-op is like getting engaged. The full-time role is like getting hired. And the way the process has historically worked, we're asking companies and learners, for that matter, to get engaged or get married without ever going on a date. So the whole concept of that micro internship encourages exploration and encourages, to use your former employer's example, a Google to look beyond the traditional feeder programs, to not rely on things like GPA or major. It makes it more open for them to, quote unquote, test drive or audition someone who may have come from a different school or a different major or different background. And at the same time, it allows me, Jeff, as a college student who thinks he wants to do technology and thinks the only options are Google or Meta, to start to realize that there's big companies that have really interesting tech roles that I wouldn't have thought of. So it, again, truly does democratize the process. And the outcome is really improvement for both sides. It lowers the cost per hire per company. It improves retention, improves diversity, improves employer performance. And for students or learners, it drives more effective landing of that first job. And when they're taking that job, they're confident it's the right fit because they've tried out different industries and roles.
And do you see, like, to use your analogy, the date of a micro internship leading to engagement of an internship at that company as well?
We do. And sometimes it depends on the company. So Alan might just need a project done. He needs to get a competitive analysis done. He's not hiring for full time. That's okay. He can work with the student on a market size or competitive analysis or write an article, even if there's no intention. And we've actually asked the college students that. Are you okay still working on that project? And the answer is yes. Beyond the fact they're getting paid for it, they're still building their resume. They're building a relationship with Alan, a busy professional. They're building the relationship potentially with alumni and faculty members as they're seeking advice on those projects. So students are still getting that experience. And we've actually seen companies that may not have intended to be hiring full time to realize that, gosh, Jeff did an amazing job. Let's actually look at bringing him on for something longer term. But we also see companies very intentionally using it. So one of the companies we work with, a medical device company, was looking to hire 10 entry-level sales engineers for a business development rotational program. And they were looking for individuals with backgrounds in mechanical engineering. So they actually had 25 students each do a micro internship. They used it to build relationships with the students and to introduce them to their brand and help these STEM students realize there's roles that aren't necessarily in the lab. Long story short, they were looking to hire 10. They wound up making 13 full-time hires. So all 25 or so of the students did the project. The company got the benefit of the work. They saw them in action. Some of the students realized this isn't the right fit for me. And that's okay. They self-selected out. Others, the company realized, may not have been the right fit. They had strong skills in some areas, but not necessarily in others. But through this audition, it ultimately led to better hiring outcomes. Again, 30% above expectations. And their cost per hire was 80% less than what they were normally spending. And a year later, 100% of those full-time hires are still there.
For the student getting into there, even if the job doesn't materialize, they have all those intangible benefits and they can also convert into a full-time offer.
Whether it's with that company or someone else. I mean, we hear from students all the time that employers, when they're looking at their resume or LinkedIn, all they want to talk about is those series of 1, 2, 5, 10, 20 micro internships they did throughout their academic career, because it gives the employer, one, a more effective, equitable way to assess skills. I mean, it's skills-based hiring, but it also gives the employer confidence that when Jeff is accepting that full-time role, he's doing so eyes wide open. He's not going to have this grass is greener issue.
So I love the fact that you have built this organization, Parker Dewey, and I want to go into that a little bit because I didn't think to like create an organization like this, but I did this exact same thing that you're talking about when I was an MBA student. So when I went to Columbia Business School, I was there as a J-termer. So I went 17 months through. I didn't have a summer internship. I wanted to pivot into marketing. I did not have a marketing background. I figured out a way to get a part-time internship at Kraft in Westchester through Kelly Services, Kelly Temp Services. Yep. I went up there on Fridays, and through having that experience, I built relationships there, and I wound up getting an offer from Kraft, even though it wasn't supposed to turn into one. I was able to build relationships inside, and it made me look more attractive to American Express, who I ultimately got the offer from and went there, because now all of a sudden I look like a marketer. Because I was working on some competitive analysis for the Gervalia brand of coffee back in 2004. So I love that you've built this, and I love that you're doing this for so many people.
Well, and to your point, I mean, doing it coming from Columbia Business School, which is a great program, and with your prior work experience, you had certain skills that allowed you to do it yourself, but there was still friction, I'm sure. Kraft has to figure out how to pay you. And again, they were working through a third-party temp agent, et cetera, et cetera.
It was a pain in the ass.
Yeah. And our whole thesis is let's remove those points of friction. So the way Parker Dewey is structured is that Alan, the busy professional, can host a micro internship on the site, doesn't have to think school by school or deal with each school. Like, again, we're not replacing that relationship, but we're trying to just make it easy for Alan, the busy professional. Alan can pay using his credit card because the micro intern he selects is not an employee or contractor of Alan's company. So again, we remove that friction to make it simple, but we also allowed the student who might not have gone into school knowing he or she wants to do marketing or has the ability to get in the door at Kraft, let's give them that opportunity to explore. I mean, one of the students we talked to is a philosophy major and talked about the fact no companies have the job title of philosopher. Even Google doesn't have that. How can I use my philosophy degree to start to figure out what I want to do? And the irony is all of those core skills developed with one's philosophy degree, the communication, problem solving, ability to craft an argument, are those same skills employers are most hungry for, according to that NACE survey. Let's use this platform essentially to help that philosophy student do that exploration, even if he or she doesn't have the skills that Alan does to be able to figure out how to navigate it on his or her own.
First, talk a little bit about the genesis of Parker Dewey, what the name even is, and the origin behind it and what you're trying to build with Parker Dewey.
So the origin was, I mean, literally was thinking about sort of the challenges I mentioned with college to career as an investor in the space and getting to know some of the students who are smart, hardworking, had all these skills but couldn't get jobs. I was thinking about our own hiring process at the private equity firm I was at, that we were only recruiting from certain schools. And we bring someone in for the full-time role who interviewed well, had a great GPA, but you realize the first week it may not be the right fit. Or the fact that we always had these little projects come up the other 10 months of the year when we didn't have summer interns. And we didn't necessarily need someone for 3 months, but we needed for a discrete project. I tried to find organizations that were doing it, partially so I could be a customer and hopefully even an investor. No one was. So I spent the next 6 months doing research around this concept and ultimately decided to start it. The name Parker Dewey was very intentional. We're actually named after Francis Parker and John Dewey, who were the two pioneers and thought leaders around experiential learning. You learn through doing. You learn through those experiences. When someone is assessing skills, it's more than just, again, pedigree. And it's a core to what we believe.
And how long has this company existed for?
We turned on the platform very quietly and carefully in 2016, really to prove the thesis, to prove that companies do in fact have these 10, 20, 30 hour projects that they can give to college students, see positive results from the work itself, but also see the long-term benefits of it for the companies, but also for the learners, figuring out, again, were there only certain types of learners? Is this just for the student who goes to the Ivy League school with a high GPA, or can it truly level the playing field and ensure everyone has equitable access? So over the first few years, we really tested those things out. And I was really proud of the impact. We saw that companies were truly looking beyond just the highest GPA or what school. They wanted to use this to explore beyond the traditional feeder schools. we were seeing students over 98% of the time were exceeding the expectations of hiring managers. 98% of the time. It was insane. We're seeing 96% of the students professionally employed upon graduation after doing micro internships versus 47% who are under or unemployed overall in this. So we're seeing all of the right metrics. And then we started scaling it up and really started saying, okay, we're now seeing marketing projects, and a lot of marketing projects look like this. We need someone to write the blog article. We need someone to do competitive analysis. We need someone to help create a social media content calendar for the month of November tied to blank. All of these projects with defined beginnings, defined ends, that were not bet the company projects. So again, they're not companies where if the student doesn't do a great job, company goes out of business. They weren't high risk, but they were valuable and important. And what we've done is essentially templatized a whole bunch of them as well.
Wow. And so the company has been around for like 7 years?
Yeah.
What's the bigger challenge? Getting enough demand from companies to hire this talent, or enough supply of talented individuals to do all these great micro internships?
On the student side, we do zero marketing, and we never have. We have millions of students on the platform. We don't market to them. We love the fact that we have partnerships with 700 plus colleges and universities, but we don't market to them either. Our view is if you're giving the college students what they actually want, these real paid professional experiences, you don't have to market to them. You don't have to. It's not like the career fair or whatever job board where the schools have to beg essentially to try to convince the students to show up. Or where the companies are saying, what's the most effective piece of swag to get a student to visit our career fair booth? Our view is if you give the student what they actually want, again, these real experiences, they'll flock to them. And again, it's held true over the past 7-8 years. On the company side, that's where we spend a lot of time sort of helping companies understand how this fits into their campus recruiting playbook, how this can help lower their cost per hire, improve diversity, improve retention. And that takes time. Again, a lot of campus recruiting programs have been around for a while. They have their traditional playbook, and we're starting to see, because we have the metrics, we're starting to see them question some of those traditional processes they had. Again, not replacing the deep partnerships they've built with colleges and universities, but using the micro internships either to reinforce those relationships. Let's start to get to know freshmen and sophomores at these schools while we've historically only focused on juniors or seniors, or to look beyond. Maybe there's a school that's not big enough that a company can go visit in person, but gosh, there's a great network of college students they should be recruiting from there. The micro internships allow them to do that, which is why on the company side, we've worked with startups all the way to Fortune 100 and everything in between.
And the interns, do they get paid?
100% of the micro interns are paid and paid fairly. And to your point, it's not about cheap labor. This is not about, I want to send something overseas for 5 cents an hour. On average, the micro internships shake out to be about $20 an hour, but they're fixed fee. So Alan needs someone to research and write an article. I think it'll take you about 15 hours. I'll pay $300. There's no back and forth negotiation. There's no bidding. Again, part of how we level the playing field. So it's not just for the rich kids who can afford to do unpaid work or be cheap labor. So Alan sets the price. Students see the project. If they're interested, they apply. If not, they don't. Alan selects the student he or she wants to work with, and the student gets paid. And whether it actually takes that student 14 hours or 15 or 17, Alan is paying that same $300, and 90% of that goes into the student's pocket. And then there's no temp to perm. So if Alan says, gosh, I loved working with Jeff, I want to look at bringing him on as a summer intern or full-time hire, as one of my colleagues likes to say, we'll send you flowers, not a bill. Our goal is to get the students off the platform and get those great full-time jobs and summer internships, because there's millions of other college students and recent grads who are hungry for these opportunities.
I don't usually go down this path here, but I'm curious. So how does Parker Dewey make money?
So we make 10% on each project, which, to be blunt, covers our direct costs, because the students on our payroll is getting 1099'd by us, et cetera. It is not a very good business model, and that's someone coming from the finance side. But we also build very specialized programs for companies as well, which do have additional costs or fees. So yeah. Some companies are saying, we are using this to go build our pool of talent for entry-level associates in our program. And we'll build things that are very, very customized. We'll actually crosswalk specific micro internships to full-time roles they have and make suggestions, give them enormous amounts of data that they can use to improve decision making, et cetera. But every one of those things, we still hold by that core of our business that we want to create these equitable pathways. We will not allow companies to filter based upon GPA or major, for instance, because of our fundamental belief that GPA and major don't predict a good hire. We won't allow unpaid work. We will never charge a temp to perm. So all of these things we do with the organizations to make sure that we're still staying true to our mission.
Interesting. I can see major as an indicator of someone's interest in something, though. Like, I guess some employers look at the major as how difficult of a course load they're taking as well.
Sometimes. But one of the things we'll see is a company might be looking, has a marketing role, they're only looking at marketing majors.
Right.
But yeah, the reality is the philosophy or history has the same core skills. Now, again, there's certain roles that you need core skills for. So I need someone who can code in Python, whether I'm a computer science major or a philosophy major. I may still be coding in Python as a hobby. Now, again, the company can use those skills to assess. Please only apply if you know Power BI. Please only apply if you're an expert coding in Python or Ruby on Rails or whatever language. But that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with major.
Yeah. Of the students that take part in the platform, approximately how many are there? Where are like the big sweet spots? Is it like juniors, seniors, grad school?
Yeah, that was one of the things that was most surprising to me when we launched the business. And back to that experimentation phase in 2016, I thought it was going to be primarily juniors and seniors. And one of the things we found is freshmen and sophomores are hungry. They are hungry to begin the career exploration. They're hungry to figure out what is the right path before that junior year summer internship. And interestingly, we're hearing from a lot of employers, they're hungry for freshmen and sophomores as well. They realize that by the time someone's a junior or senior, they've kind of sort of made up their mind where they want to go, where they think they have a certain path. It's really freshman and sophomore year that they're most interested in exploring. But again, every company's different. We work with a very large company that's historically been focused on juniors and seniors, but they're having this moment right now where they said, We have this bigger need for summer interns for next summer than we expected, and they're very focused on getting to know juniors as well. And it's great as they already have that pool, and we're working with them to very specifically target juniors with certain geographic ties where they're from D.C. or go to school in D.C., but again, now they can access that student who's from the D.C. area, even if he or she goes to school in Texas or California or Indiana, my alma mater, or SUNY Binghamton, without having to go schlep to those schools.
Yeah. Can any student join Parker Dewey?
Anyone over the age of 18. So again, we're very transparent. For someone like you or me, it's not really going to be that interesting. Someone who's had that career experience, we don't necessarily want to go do a 20-hour market size analysis project for $400. It's just not the highest and best use of our time, but we're still welcome. And while we have partnerships with 700 plus colleges and universities, we welcome anyone open arms. Anyone that wants to sign up, create an account, apply to work on projects, we welcome them. Now, certainly things are even better when the school is involved. We can start to do some really interesting things where they're bringing alumni to post projects for their students, or certain employers that are trying to have certain goals. We want to get to know more freshmen and sophomores. It becomes a great way to collaborate with the schools that creates wins for the school, students, and employers. But again, we welcome anyone.
So any student can do this. Your data shows that people that do these micro internships have a much better rate of getting hired down the road. Why would a student not sign up for Parker Dewey?
I legitimately don't know.
I guess you don't need to market it to the students.
That's it. And look, if I am a junior or senior and I knew going into school or had 100% confidence going into school that I want to be an investment banker and I have my job and my summer internship at Goldman Sachs already. As junior or senior, I don't need to go on it. And if, again, as a freshman or sophomore, if I just know that for whatever reason, again, you don't need to be on it. And that's okay. Now, I would argue as a freshman or sophomore, as someone who, again, started his career in investment banking, it probably would have behooved me as a freshman or sophomore to try this out if it existed then, even if it's just to confirm. But again, we are here to support anyone. And in fact, one of the things we found is students who sometimes aren't able to participate in summer internships, and this actually, Alan, goes back a little bit to your time at Columbia, they can't participate in summer internships because they're taking courses, or they're a student athlete, or they have a part-time job they need to support their family or any number of things. They can still use micro internships to sort of help build their resume and help support those other initiatives. Again, I don't view it as a perfect replacement for the summer internship. It doesn't replace that 10 weeks on site in all of the informal interactions and relationships, but it's certainly better than, again, the alternative, which is not having the professional experience.
And do MBAs and master's students, like grad students, partake in Perkadui as well?
Yeah, we'll see a lot of MBA students, especially if they're coming from the background where they're going to business school to really do a career pivot. A lot of master's students, we'll see a lot of law students, which has been interesting to me. People who are 1Ls or 2Ls who realize they may not want to practice at a traditional firm, and they're trying to figure out how else to apply their law degree, or even it's confirmation. Confirmation that I think I do want to do this type of law. Let me go do a project.
I think this is amazing. Like this is what I struggled with to create back in 2004 for myself at Kraft. And now people can just go to parkerdewey.com and sign up.
And the big difference between now and 2004, when I think I graduated business school, actually the same year as you, 2004.
I graduated 05, but I did the internship in 04.
Yeah. So I was 04. In 2004, remote work wasn't what it is today. And people weren't as comfortable giving the projects. I think what we saw in 2014, 2015 was, again, the emergence of the technology that allowed remote work to take place, whether it's Zoom, whether it's sort of Google shared documents, et cetera. And the data shows the efficacy.
Wow, this is great. And you and I will need to talk about how Kadima Careers can get involved in a partner for Parkerdewey, because we can definitely use some of these great, talented individuals.
Well, and we're huge fans of Kadima. I mean, the work you're doing, and even the name of this podcast about own your career. I mean, that's one of the big messages that we have to the students. It also goes back to, again, why we don't allow schools to require it. And why we don't market. We believe that taking ownership of your career and your pathway is really key. It's taking that ownership. It's the consumerism. It's recognizing that everyone should have the opportunity to create their own path. And let's make the process easier to do that. So we're huge fans of what you're doing to help individuals own their careers.
Thanks, Jeffrey. I think as you created your business, I created my business. We have a lot of similarities in our background. One glaring similarity that I mentioned to you as we're prepping for this was you went to a public university and then you invested a shit ton of money, I'm assuming, in your MBA at a private university. I did the same thing. I went to Binghamton, where my tuition was $2,650 a semester or a year. I don't know if it was a semester or a year,
wow,
whatever it was.
And that's $2,600, not $26,000.
No, $2,650.
Just making sure for the listeners, yeah. Here. Like, yes.
I have an article in my presentation where I, like New York Times, I remember when I was in college, the students were up in arms because Governor Pataki increased the tuition by $500 from $2,150 to $2,650.
Unbelievable.
Fortunately, I came from a household where my parents could afford that. So I was able to go to Binghamton. But we both went to public schools, which were cheap or very cheap for me. I don't know how much Indiana was.
I was out of state, so it was a little bit more, but still.
And then we went to very expensive MBA schools. Mine was $138,000. At Columbia. I graduated in 2005. I don't know if you remember the cost of yours, but it's probably somewhere in that ballpark. I'd love to hear your thought process. I don't know if you did it intentionally at the time or what led you to invest a big chunk of money and time into your MBA. And if you'd like to opine a little bit on the public undergrad or the more economical undergrad, and spend a little bit more for the grad school.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was as intentional thought process in the public versus private, certainly back then. I mean, part of the reason I went to Indiana was the undergraduate business school when I was there was ranked like two or three in the country. And to be blunt, I wouldn't have gotten into Wharton for undergrad anyway. So I'm not sure there was as much intentionality. I think when I made the decision to go to Penn for grad school, it was a different time. I specifically think about or remember when I was talking with some of the partners at the private equity firm I was at, Summit Partners, and they were talking about the fact that they will never have a partner who doesn't have a graduate degree. It was just every one of them had MBAs. I think maybe there were a couple of guys with Harvard law degrees, but every one of them. And I was an associate and I was finishing up my third year and I could have stuck around to be a fourth year senior associate or whatever the term was. But I sort of looked around and everyone had, again, MBAs. And here I was with an undergrad degree, again, one I thought was incredibly valuable and some great work experience. Everyone had that graduate degree, that stamp on their resume. And I thought I needed it. And ultimately, that was what it came down to. My other view at the time was if I was going to get an MBA, I really had to do it from somewhere with the prestige, if you will, where that stamp on my resume was additive to the Kelly undergrad, which meant, again, by definition, it was going to be Columbia or Penn or Harvard or Stanford. Otherwise, it kind of wasn't worth going. And I got into to Penn and a couple of others and chose Penn. And in retrospect, the world has changed dramatically. You're seeing more partners at private equity and venture and growth firms who don't have MBAs, especially if they came from an undergraduate background in business and had that business experience. So it's tough to assess if it was the quote unquote right or wrong decision. I think it just comes down to finding a school that's the right fit for you. Finding a school where you're going to develop those skills, not just the hard skills, but also those core skills, the communication, problem solving, teamwork. But there's no single right answer. I don't know, Alan, if that answers your question at all versus just being a rambling diatribe.
No, it does. And I think it's a very personal choice. And people ask me all the time, should I get my MBA or not? And I was like, it really depends on a lot of factors, what the opportunity cost is, what school you're going to, what sort of scholarship you're getting for it.
And part of my answer when I get that question is, why are you getting it? If you worked as a K-12 teacher and you decided you want to be a business person, yes, you kind of need to go get it. And there is a demonstrated reason. Or if you were a product marketer at Kraft and you decided you want to be a consultant or an investment banker, yes, it lets you make that career pivot as you're building those skills. We see a lot of folks from the military after they finish their time in the service. Those make sense. But if you're doing it just for the good housekeeping seal on your resume, then starting to analyze not just the direct cost, but as you said, the opportunity cost is very real.
Yeah, it does. It's a very personal decision, and you got to weigh the cost and the benefit and what other things you can do to get that opportunity and experience as well.
And the online education today is materially different than when you and I went to school. Yeah. Like, some people might have gone to business school to learn how to do a financial model, learn how to use Excel. I'm being overly simplistic, but now I can go take a course online to learn how to do that, or take a remote class from a quote-unquote top business school to learn a lot of those skills. So if it's just plugging in very tactical, hard skills, you can do that online without spending a year or two in a traditional MBA program.
Yep, totally agreed. It's important to ask that question first. What are you getting an MBA for?
One other thing to add, I think this is true both with business school programs, but even law degrees or medical degrees. I think we're starting to see more and more of the graduate programs looking for 1, 2, 3 years of work experience before admitting folks. The MBAs, I think, were actually ahead of the curve on that because they're realizing, let's give individuals opportunities to really confirm that is the right path before they come to our program and spend the money, et cetera, et cetera. I think that is a positive improvement in the situation. It certainly increases the opportunity cost of going and getting your graduate degree, but it also increases the likelihood that you're going for the right reasons.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I went to B school, I think I was like 29 maybe when I went, and I think the average age was like 27 then, so I was a little bit older, or maybe 25, I don't know. But having that experience and being able to apply it to some of the classroom learning, and also I think the relationships that I built there were a little bit deeper because we went through some shitty bosses and some difficult situations and different companies, so I think it made those relationships richer as well.
100% agree.
Cool. So what are you looking to do with Parker Dewey as you're growing it? Like, you have a great platform. You're really empowering undergrads and grad students of, you're democratizing it for anybody. What are you looking to do with the company?
I think it comes down to the fact that I fundamentally believe that micro internships should be a core part of both the university experience for learners, but also the recruiting process for employers. They should be just as integral as the summer internship or the career fair or the on-campus interviews. And that is our mission. And again, whether we tried to make it really easy to do it on Parker Dewey and built a process and built a platform that encourages and makes it simple for employers to offer those opportunities and students to participate. But as far as I'm concerned, I just want micro internships to be that core part, whether you're doing them through us or doing them on your own, or we just believe in that. And we believe there's some core aspects of it that are important, like every one of these projects is paid fairly. There's a lot of discussion about unpaid simulations and unpaid work. And the reality is that's unfair. It limits access for a whole bunch of students. It hurts employer brand, no matter how you try to couch it, et cetera, et cetera. So we stay true to the fact that these experiences should be paid and paid fairly. And again, we think they should be integral to everyone's experience in a post-secondary program.
So wrapping up on time, I have two more questions for you, Jeffrey. One, what is one of the sickest piece of career advice that you've ever had that you typically share with other people?
Yeah, the best thing that was said to me was day one in my full-time role at DLJ after college was my boss said, your job is to make my life easier. And it's not so I can go home at 4 in the afternoon. It's not so I can be lazy or take long lunches. It's so I can make my boss's life easier. And it was great advice, especially as I got older, because what I realized he was saying is, first of all, it gives you opportunity to step up and take on more responsibility and learn more and grow faster. But it also gives you this way to learn, this way to make mistakes, this way to really take ownership of your career. And I really thought that's key. The other thing it really did is in my performance on the job, by putting myself in the shoes of my boss, it let me ask those questions. Why is he asking me for this? What other information, if I was him, would I be asking Jeff for? What else would I want to know? And what that meant is when I was giving him my work, I could tend to anticipate the questions that he was going to ask and tended to incorporate that so it wasn't a back and forth, go do this analysis or not. It takes time. The other thing that was important is he was never going to let me hang myself, if you will. So when I was stepping up or taking on more, he was never going to throw me under the bus or let me get too far ahead of my skis. And it was just, I think it's great advice. And even if you don't have a boss like that, I think it's a great approach. What is it my boss is going to anticipate? Why are they asking for this? It's really that empathy. It'll let you do a great job in that job, but they'll position you to step up and take on more.
Yeah, I really like that piece of advice because not only does it give you the control as an individual to say, like, put yourself in your boss's shoes, but also if you're the boss, and a lot of people are bosses, I think it's a great opportunity to think that and give that advice to people with the intent to grow and develop that person so that they can see inside and understand how they can make your job easier. They need to see it to like be able to solve it.
We talk about that internally at Parker Dewey all the time. I mean, I've told the team, I'm like, my goal is to come into work every day and have you guys tell me what to do and where I'm supposed to be and everything. It really gives people that sense of ownership and empowerment, and it lets people view me as a resource for them versus the other way around.
Awesome. That's a great piece of advice, Jeffrey. Last question. How can people find you, follow you, help you, support you, reach out to you?
Sure. ParkerDewey.com, all one word. I'm also on LinkedIn. Again, Jeffrey Moss, pretty easy to find on LinkedIn. Can always send us an email. So my email is pretty complicated. It's just jeffrey@parkerdewey.com. Happy to be of whatever help I can for learners. They're really looking to launch their careers. Again, we have a ton of resources online, but I'm happy to always jump on a call and help. And for busy professionals, whether you run your campus, your company's early career or campus recruiting programs, or whether you're just a busy professional with too much work on your plate, post a micro internship. It's really simple. Give it to a highly motivated college student. It's a great way to get work off your plate. Feels good doing it because you've given someone a shot and you might even find your next great hire.
Yeah, I'm definitely bringing this back to my team because it's a great opportunity for us and the student.
Yeah, we all have those we should and I shouldn't projects on our plate. Those things you don't have time for or ain't the best use of your time. There are literally millions of college students who are hungry to help.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jeffrey, so much for spending some time with me today.
Thanks, Alan. What a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the Accelerator, XLR8R. You will get great tips about your career. You'll get honest insights. You'll get the occasional pet picture. And you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba. And we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.